Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we begin this Thursday night edition, Thursday evening, Thursday afternoon, Thursday morning edition of Head On. I am Bob, and I'm hoping we're going to have 3 hours of wonderful conversation this evening, similar to the really scintillating times we have had of late. Sorry for bailing out an hour early last night, but you know what? These things happen sometimes. I was able to sit in on the conference call with the other scholarship winners with Democracy for America and Netroots Nation. That is shaping up to be a magnificent experience, and I am so very, very excited about the prospect of bringing every last minute of it to you and to any others who want to hear all or any portion of the various and sundry panels, discussions, what have you, the plenary sessions, all of it. Man, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting. Looking forward to something else, too. I had told you that because of financial difficulties, I would not be attending the Campaign for America's Future Conference in Washington, D.C. That has changed. I will, in fact, be there. Just talked to Guy James this evening, and yes, I will be there. So it's going to be kind of interesting. I'll be there. Guy James will be there. Mark Levine will be there. It should be quite an exciting afternoon each day. And for my part, just a program note, I will be live, and here's the weird part. I will be live from noon to 3. Noon to 3 Eastern Time. So that would be 9 to noon Pacific. I'll be live from noon to 3 Eastern Time instead of my regular slot. Many thanks have to go out to people who have made it possible to make this trip. It's encouraging. And we will be all together for an on-air conversation. We'll find a way to do that. I think it'll be a blast. So what will happen is the show will be live noon to 3. Then it will be recorded, or it'll be recorded in progress and then replayed later in the evening at 6 p.m. Cool, huh? Yeah, even cooler are the efforts of those who have made it possible to be there. Campaign for America's Future has lined up a ton of excellent guests that I'm looking forward to talking to, sharing with you. They have also made arrangements for the hotel space, which is, it's all going to be there at the Omni Shoreham Hotel, which is pretty nice digs, I got to tell you. Pretty nice indeed. So I am indeed looking forward to it intensely. So that means Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday are going to be weird schedule days. I will get up on Thursday morning and drive back here to the hills and hollers. And stay tuned. It's going to be quite interesting, to say the least. 5 minutes past the hour, and just a couple of things before we go I generally try not to make a show-to-show dialogue, but just a couple of things that I mentioned this last night about North Korea and its nuke. I am no pacifist, and I am no fantasist. I live in reality world. But I tell you what, as we discuss something like North Korea and nukes, something that I mentioned last night, feel free to disagree. I mean, you know, we're friends, we're neighbors, we talk across the back fence. That's what this conversation is all about. But does it really do anybody any good to talk about to fulminate about the danger of North Korea without at least trying to understand why North Korea might be a little bit nervous? The teeny tiny starving little country. And by being tough on North Korea, what does that mean? What, we're going to cut the food off? We're going to cut the heating oil off? You know, they have some pretty ugly winters there. As I recall, if I recall correctly, the Clinton administration response was carrot and stick. You know, you close down the nuke program and we'll make sure you don't go hungry. And as such, look, the people building the nukes in North Korea are not doing it by happenstance or chance. They are very intelligent people. They were provided the technology, as we know now, because the CIA was asleep at the switch and didn't notice that a Pakistani scientist by the name of A.Q. Khan had opened up a nuclear Walmart in that country and was selling nuclear technology left and right. It's a screw up worthy of Austin Powers or Maxwell Smart. Go Gadget nuke program. No. And so when we, but if we talk about why North Korea might want nuclear weapons, we might make progress on helping North Korea not need nuclear weapons. Because see, thing one, this is not Dr. Seuss, I don't have thing two. Yeah, I do. I got things two, three, four, five, and six. But no, thing one on this list is the fact that we are very hostile toward North Korea, who is very hostile toward us. A state of war still exists between, undeclared, mind you, but a state of hostilities still exists between the United States and North Korea. There's no truce. There's no treaty. There is a ceasefire in Korea that's managed to hold for a while for the most part. That's all. They're still hostile toward us. We're still hostile toward them. And adding into the bargain, the fact that the United States is the only nation on the planet ever to drop atomic devices on Asian people. Now, I know that may not sound very patriotic, but it is. We are the only nation on Earth ever to drop a nuclear device on Asian people. Yeah, you're right, Ferg. Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Although I'm sure, what was his name? Mark Krikorian. That's a fine Cherokee name, Krikorian. Wants us to not pronounce, I'm sure he hates the pronunciation of Hiroshima. Hiroshima! Yeah, remember, he wants natural English pronunciations, right-wing freak. But we really do have to take a hard look at why it is a country would want nuclear devices. Now, there is nuclear armed to the teeth People's Republic of China to the north of North Korea. There's the United States of America that can that could put a nuclear device squarely on the top of Kim Jong-il's little head if we but so desired. There's Japan that does not have nuclear devices, but also does not have any love for Korean people. Yeah, as Lottie notes, yeah, don't forget all the Polynesian islands that now glow in the dark, Bob. Yeah, I know. Tropical paradise, with a few rentgens added in for good measure. Kind of like putting a couple of drops of, I don't know, lighter fluid in your moonshine, just for flavor, mind you. But we really do have to think about that kind of thing, don't we? Because if we don't, we're just going to find ourselves in the same stupid feedback loop that put us where we are now. Look at where 8 years of George Bush and the tricycle of evil approach got us. They weren't nuke, but they went nuke under George because he wanted to keep needling. So figuring out why any country would want nuclear devices is really important. For instance, I'm not going to go into it. For instance, I'll get nasty emails. But the other thing that Mark said toward the end of his program that I just feel like it's a stepping off place for the program tonight, something to think about, something to consider, is his statement that if Egypt does not deal with its lack of democracy, and I'm paraphrasing, that we will wind up with, and I believe these were Mark's exact words, a nation as dangerous as Iran. Which, to me, logically, means that Egypt would wind up a nation that is not dangerous at all. Because you got to remember, no matter how badly a certain segment of the population wants to fantasize that Iran is this soon-to-be proto-nuclear giant just leering over the Middle East, it's simply not true. Do you remember the right-wing hissy fit that was thrown when the Bush administration's own intelligence community came back and said, oh, geez, sorry. They're not trying to build any nuclear devices in Iran. And all the little wing nuts and the various and sundry other factions all said, but we want them to be, because we hate them. We hate them, my precious. We hate them. We hate the Iran, precious. Really? Did somebody point out what a threat Iran is? Don't have any nukes. If they had 10 tomorrow, they still wouldn't be a threat. No matter the fulminations of certain segments of the population, they would not be a threat. I have a question to ask. And maybe this is great. We're talking about carrot and stick politics, probably, with North Korea. You give up your nuke plans, and we'll feed you, and we'll provide you American aid. So may I take it from that having a nuclear plan for some people, or a nuclear program for some people, or actual nuclear device for some countries, is a bar to aid from the American people? Shouldn't that really be a rule for the United States? If you have nuclear devices, you can no longer have American money in the form of aid to your country. Doesn't that make sense? We don't like other countries out there developing nuclear devices because, you know, only a nation like us that's dropped nuclear weapons on people can be trusted to have nuclear weapons. I think you get my meaning. Really, I think that should be a rule. You have nuclear devices. You obviously are well off enough that you don't need any further United States financial aid. Because really, a nuclear program is sort of a benchmark that you're not exactly struggling to. North Korea, they don't feed their people and stuff. But we deem other countries that have nuclear programs to be a threat. And as such, we withhold aid. with a single exception. Single really big glaring exception that has a humongous lobby inside the United States. Just a question. Should we be funding nuclear states? Or when you've got nuclear weapons, have you entered a certain different kind of club that means, you know, no more aid for you? But this business of trying to talk about North Korean nukes while at the same and then sort of doing this false assertion that Iran is my God, Iran hasn't crossed its own borders to invade anybody since it was called Persia. I mean, like 300 years and more. Iran hasn't left its borders. I mean, the real Persian threat was taken care of by Alexander, for the most part. And trust me when I say that was a long time ago. Yeah, but just a starting place. A couple other little food for thought moments before we go into the rest of the program. You know your phone calls are always welcome, of course. Area code 304-658-3333. Area code 304-658-3333. Or if you need to go the toll-free route, you are welcome to chime in at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. You're welcome in the chat room. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. You're welcome on the forums. You're welcome on the blogs. You're welcome to participate in this whole wonderful little experiment in the reinvention of the American dialogue and debate. I hope you'll take advantage of it. But one thing I want to throw out there, and I'm going to make this assertion again. You may agree or disagree, of course. But I really think we do ourselves a disservice when we talk about nominees to the Supreme Court of the United States as being liberal or conservative. All judges are conservative. Some are less than others, but all are conservative. Liberal is not really a word you can use when describing someone sitting on the bench. When you go to describe a judge, especially one that has risen to the level of being considered for a slot on the Supreme Court of the United States, using the word liberal is just, in my humble opinion, silly. Judges, by definition, are guardians of the status quo. By virtue of the way that our American legal system operates, a judge may not look forward. They are constantly looking backwards. That's why you wind up with things like what Sandra mentioned the other night, the Lochner Court. That's why you wind up with Dred Scott. That's why you wind up with Plessy versus Ferguson. That's why you wind up with all of those things. Things like Griswold versus Connecticut, Brown versus Board of Education. Even for those who say, well, that's liberal decisions. Roe versus Wade, liberals. No. They are at best, mere reflections or recognitions or acknowledgments of the present. When most judicial thought is mired in the precedents of the past. There is no such thing as a liberal judge. Because liberalism is incompatible with the idea of the bench. A legal system that is based upon previous precedent is incompatible with the idea, with a philosophy that looks forward and attempts to define what the future will be. No judge can ever do anything more than at best, at least hold to the status quo and at most acknowledge what the shifting present is. And to a certain extent, I keep seeing this and I'm thinking, damn it, they're winning again. Talking about liberal judges. There are no such things. There just aren't. A liberal judge, if one really existed, would probably reject the entire notion of the current current constitution of our judicial system. A liberal judge would want to look at ideas of crime and punishment and see if there was any other way of thinking about it or looking at it. A liberal judge would never convict a single solitary individual possession of marijuana. A liberal judge wouldn't do that. A liberal judge would not let a conviction stand of a person who stole because of hunger. But it happens every day. And it happens every day by virtue of the signatures and pronouncements of judges that the right wing would have you believe are liberal. And I call BS. Moderately conservative is probably the best way to describe Sonia Sotomayor. Because she can't quite put behind her the notions of her own humanity and those of people similarly situated. I hope that makes a little bit of sense. Straighten me out if you think it doesn't. And I want to share a little piece of writing with you, if you don't mind. Last night, toward the end of the program, I ran some audio from a dinosaur. An old, pasty-faced, doughy, white, cranky, creaky-jointed dinosaur by the name of Pat Buchanan. And I kept asking, I asked you, I asked myself, I asked the universe, why does anybody care what that old man thinks anymore? I asked it at rather considerable length, why anyone thinks anything about the opinion of a former congressman and open xenophobe named Tom Tancredo. Yeah, I think that's an old Cree word, Tancredo, that means doesn't like strangers. And I got a response about Pat Buchanan from our buddy David in Tennessee. And this was a sure enough dandy. And I really thought you deserved to hear it for yourself. Because it's darn smart, and it's a rather profound way to look at this whole issue. In the opening salvo, David sent me a photograph of a pair of well-maintained cap-toe Oxfords. I know the type well. He said, you set me off when you asked, as I do, why Buchanan? And then in reference to the photograph of the cap-toe Oxfords, he said, mine aren't Brooks Brothers. They're Johnston and Murphy. Same little Been There Forever factory in Berlin, Wisconsin, makes them for both. I'll bet you it is Berlin, Wisconsin. Might be Berlin, but I'm betting Berlin. Same little factory makes them for both Johnston and Murphy and Brooks Brothers. Now, the Johnston and Murphys have cute little holes in the overlay cap. The Brookies are plain. That is, he says, if memory serves him correctly. I bet you it does. So with that, I went to the attachment that David provided. And I read something, and this is the beautiful thing about people who participate in the Horn. I get stuff of a quality that you would be hard-pressed to find on the really hoity-toity way-up-there blogs. This is a case of that. David put together something that he said he calls Pat Buchanan Made Mortal and Ignorable. He says Pat Buchanan is a dinosaur. He knows it at some level, deep down. He is doing all just short of spilling his blood to deny it, but he does know it. His chest is tight, and his bowels are loose as he thinks about the future. To understand Pat, one need know only about his shoes. Yes, he wrote for and thought well of Nixon, we know that. Yes, he's God's own old-school Catholic, we know that. No secret, he wants East Coast money and power to hold forth so as all his friends can remain in their high cotton. But mostly, Patrick Joseph Buchanan must have his order and his status quo. Without his past coming forward into his future, Pat ain't at all comfy. Brooks Brothers, America's most traditional men's clothing store, aside from some place in Boston that dates to the 1880s and has a one-half in the address. Pat's shoes, he wears one style in black, has for years. Over 35 years. Buys a couple pair from the New York City Brooks Brothers store via standing order every year. Oh, yes, Brooks Brothers knows Mr. Buchanan. He gets them half-soled when holes appear. More holes than they're discarded. Think about that. The man wears one style of shoe no matter what he's doing. Only house slippers interrupt the regime. Pat and his Brooks Brothers cap toes were married long ago. Pat will live to see white people lose majority status. Think about that. Take it in. The man that busted his ass to shine the image of Nixon and Reagan will see his racial advantage, as he perceives it, disappear. He that propped up the worst of the white power structure sees a future where he loses. Pat has connections, but he fears their decline. Pat will live long enough to see one of his bead-rubbing grandkids bring home a person of color to meet the parents. Pat knows it is coming. There'll be coffee and Buchanan cream real soon. Pat is not comfy in this America. So today, the man clinging to the same shoes he wore when old Milhouse told him he was a fine young speechwriter is frightened by the future. He is pushing back that awareness as vigorously as he can. He is compelled to delay the inevitable. Look, his world is crumbling. All the connections that have allowed a hard-charging buffoon to be pulled along by like-skinned men are going away. could put in a fix for him and his. And he's paranoid about losing that ability. Sonia Sotomayor is in a position to make decisions that matter and makes Pat's chest tight and his bowels loose. Pat Buchanan. Think Charlemagne on the Normandy beach, sitting in his throne, telling the tide to not come in. Pat Buchanan made mortal and ignorable by our buddy David in Tennessee. Tell me there's any better blogging out there than that. Because there ain't. Because in those few words are distilled the truth about millions of Americans and a substantially smaller and yet incredibly powerful minority of white folks scared out of their wits. Oh, they had something to fall back on when, you know, that communist, that socialist, that Marxist, that Maoist Barack Obama was elected president. You know, well, at least his mama was white. Yeah, but she was an atheist. Oh, God, we're screwed. We got a dark-skinned man in the White House with a white atheist mama. I mean, she run off with a black man in the first place. Oh, my God. But now this. Now this. That woman on the Supreme Court. And she's not even a nice, decent, quiet, white woman like Sandra Day O'Connor was. Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg's white. I mean, she's going to hell and everything. But she's white. But this woman. I know they say Puerto Rico's in the United States, but really, really, we all know better, don't we? That's not American. American starts with M and so does male. If God had have wanted women to be in government, why, the Declaration of Independence wouldn't say all men's created equal. Didn't say nothing about no women's being created equal. That is the terrifying nightmare world that Newt Gingrich lives in. That's the terrifying nightmare world that Pat Robertson lives in, and Pat Buchanan, and the most recent incarnation of Falwell, and Grover Norquist, and a list that is nigh unto ad infinitum of white folks who, like Lord Mountbatten watching the Union Jack lowered for the last time in India, and the new flag of the Indian democracy raised, knows that he is watching the end of something and feels the warmth of the rays of a setting sun on his back. That's why they're so weird. That's why they're going so nuts. Anytime people in power perceive that their power is going away, they will begin to act irrationally. Whether it's Pat Buchanan, who probably, as David says, yeah, will live to see some coffee in his cream, so to speak. But even more terrifying for the likes of, say, a Tucker Carlson, who is not just going to see a little bit, but is going to watch the full blossoming of freedom in the United States. A freedom that they despise. A freedom that they loathe. And underneath it all, there is a subcurrent. Those still waters, as they say, running deep. There is a substrate of mortal fear. It is the fear of the vanquished who once upon a time marched and strutted proudly and told the wogs to cast their eyes downward. It is a fear that what they spent generations doing to others will finally be meted out measure for measure to them. Most likely it won't. Most likely it won't. People who have been abused are seldom willing to become abusers in their own right. That rule holds true in many instances and fails only in a few. But it is, in point of fact, it is the fear born of deep-seated acknowledgement of profound guilt. These pasty-faced, doughy old white men know that it was a pasty-faced old white man who wrote the Dred Scott decision, who wrote Plessy, who wrote Lochner, who wrote Long Island Railroad, who wrote every miserable piece of dreck that the Supreme Court has ever gotten wrong. It's worth thinking about. When you hear Pat Buchanan losing his mind, when you hear Flush Flembaugh losing what remains of his, when you hear the likes of this from the self-described rodeo clown Glenn Beck, know where the center of that place is from which it comes.
Okay, so she's taking an affirmation. She's not swearing. She's just taking an affirmation that she's going to try her best to impartially discharge her duties. That she's going to do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and she will not respect people. She's not going to be a respecter of persons, but a respecter of law.
This is what I was trying to say. It's like when you're talking about her being a Hispanic female, I don't see what the relevance is.
No, that doesn't mean anything. Reads all the way to... I mean, sure, it's chap...
Is it just me, or is Glenn Beck slurring? Just asking.
Chapter 1. It's Title 28, which implies there's 27 other things you have to read before. And sure, it's Chapter 1, but it's Part 453. Who's reading that? It's just like, hey, Hispanic chick lady, you're empathetic? She says, yep. They say, you're in.
Okay, that's... No, come on. Come on. Get with me here. Even for a right-wing gas bag like Glenn Beck, that's drunky talk. That's loaded talk. That's 80-proof talk. It's gotta be. Come on. Back up.
27 other things you have to read before. And sure, it's chapter one, but it's part 453. Who's reading that? They're just like, hey, Hispanic chick lady.
It's like, hey, Hispanic chick lady. God, he's channeling Foster Brooks or something.
You're empathetic? She says, yep. They say, you're in. That's the way it really works. I mean, they might do this on ceremony, but that's not ceremony.
Are you
I'm pretty sure. I will do some research on it, but I'm pretty sure. Look, the reason to celebrate today is we have an empathetic Hispanic woman. The reason to be pissed off is she's not transgendered, and she is, and she's not handicapped. She's not blind. She's not in a wheelchair. I don't know if she has any kind of, you know, chemical imbalance.
No, we know who has the chemical imbalance, Glenn. Did you get that? That fool just declared that a blind person is ineligible to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States. There is, honest to God, no end to their bigotries. Everyone is a threat to doughy, pasty-faced old white men like Glenn Beck and Pat Buchanan and pasty-faced young white men like Tucker Carlson. You know, they're scared. They're scared of Osama bin Laden because they live in a world that is comprised almost exclusively of fear. What did David say? His chest is tight and his bowels are loose. That's Glenn Beck, too. If you're in a wheelchair, if you need mobility assistance, according to Glenn Beck, you are not competent, no matter how good your brain, you are not competent to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States. Deaf? Forget it. Hearing impaired? Visually impaired? If you are not genetically certifiably provable as genetically pure, white, Aryan perfection, you don't get a seat. I'll bet a few more shots of whatever it is he had that was making him slur like that, and he'd tell you he had a real problem with Alito. God knows he has a problem with Justice Ginsburg. It ain't got nothing to do with being no liberal, because we've already been over that ground. There ain't no such thing as a liberal judge. That's something they invented. And then there's the whole empathetic versus empathic. Glenn, grammar check is your friend. Because you know this is all scripted, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, you do. You lying sack. You do know. You know what your real fear is. You know what your nightmare is. We know that. We've heard it. We've heard Gordon Liddy referring to the Spanish language as speaking illegal alien. Reminds me of the time when I was in high school and we tried to get 1 year's instruction in Russian. And the good God-fearing American parents rose up and said, "We're not going to have our children learning communist!" Do svidaniya, baby. They are absolutely coming on the heck glued. And the poster child for this insanity. Oh, by the way, did I tell you when I was sitting watching Fox the other day in the doctor's office making me feel sicker than I even was in the first place? Did I tell you what happened when Glenn Beck went to break? Okay, so they go to break. We'll be back with more of the Glenn Beck program right after this. And who's standing there on the TV screen looking me in the eye, eyeballing me? Yeah, another pasty-faced, doughy old white guy, G. Gordon Liddy. Hustling gold. You can't trust the American currency now. You buy gold. What a hustle. What a dodge. I felt like I checked. No, just a polo shirt and a pair of shorts. I thought maybe I'd walked in with my tattered purple robe with the tattered sleeves and the busted sleeve spring with the fourth, with the fifth ace in it, and the moon and stars sort of falling off of it. Magic 8-ball with the crack in it that said answer hazy, ask again later was nowhere to be found. Sitting there fulminating about the California budget crisis, goes to break to hustle his otherwise silly and credulous viewers into parting with their money to invest in gold that ain't never going to be bought. But he's gone completely out of his mind, as they all have. Brand new from our friends at Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org. The latest rant. It would not be fair not to share this with you.
Here's the question that I have. You say that it doesn't go up.
Sit up straight. I'm sorry. I know it's video. I'm dancing about architecture. Right. Sit up straight, Glenn. You hunch-shouldered freak. Sit up straight.
To the White House, and I'm not sure that it does either. I'm not implying that Barack Obama is involved in this at all. But he, again, I keep hearing the voice of my mother. Pick your friends carefully. Show me your friends, and I'll show you your future.
We have established beyond
his any friends and his
doubt.
Nominees and everything. They're all Marxists.
We have established
his friends, his nominees, and everything. They're all Marxists. They've seen the big board. They're all Marxists? Where's our television show where we get to say, George Bush and all of his friends, they're all fascists? Oh, wait. That's not allowed. They're all Marxists. Running around with little Molotov cocktails and secret decoder rings for sending all their little commie messages?
Established beyond a reasonable doubt that President Obama used a far-left path to amass power.
I don't think he's using it.
He's not going to deny that.
I don't think he's using it. I think these people actually believe it.
Huh? This ain't working for me. A far-left... by the way, that other voice, in case you couldn't guess, was Bill O'Reilly. Bill? What? Far left? You know, he attacked O'Reilly, I guess in the last day or so, attacked the concept of blogging. And he's gone so insane that now he's attacking right-wing blogs, too. And now he's got, you got a problem, Bill. He's got Michelle Malkin all hot under the collar at him. Oh, the insanity, it's a parade. I mean, this is going to the zoo and standing in the monkey house and expecting not to be hit with flying poo. That's what that's what the windows are for. That's why there's no more bars on cages. Nuts. They're all Marxists. They're commies. How long, really, honest to God, how long before they completely revert and somebody in one of these confirmation hearings...
Madam, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party of the United States? At what point does one of these abused human beings get to come across the table and just take a few teeth out of a right winger? See, shame on me. I'm poisoning the dialogue again. Or wait, maybe it's not me poisoning the dialogue. Maybe it's Marion Robertson. You know, Pat.
I was thinking of you, Reverend, knowing that guest coming right before you. He ain't happy with a lot of stuff, financial stuff that's being shoved down his throat. What do you say?
Well, you know, I've been calling for GM to declare bankruptcy for months and months and months. It's the only orderly way to do it, but they should follow.
Oh, come on, Pat. They should follow what?
The bankruptcy proceedings, and then you're right, the secured bond.
The secured bondholders. Oh, I know where this is going. I know very well where this is going. As Mark Levine noted, it was the bondholders that are forcing this bankruptcy. Because they, you got to understand, America's moneyed elite feels like they have a no level playing field for them. They have a right. It's right there in the Constitution, even if they can't find it. They have a right to never lose on an investment. They bought the bonds. They're going to take a beating. But no, they want all their money up front and hell and damnation with everybody else.
Bondholders ought to have a preference not to be at the tail end after all the unions and the pension funds have gotten their cut.
You know, Reverend, you...
What? They're not even broadcasting live from a planet that isn't this one. It's Fox News.
You always hear the argument from those espousing more government intervention in companies like GM and more stimulus, is that this is the good and decent thing to do, the humanitarian thing to do. Some even incorporating Jesus here to say that's what Jesus would do. Would he? Is Jesus a fan of big government?
What?
Neil Cavuto? You didn't. But he did. Is Jesus a fan of big government? And we're asking whom about this? Yes, the guy who peddled the muscle-building milkshakes that aren't and wants to build Jesus land on the shores of the Galilee and has hustled Peter Godbold, where are you when I need you? Sea of Galilee mud mask. Is Jesus a fan of big government? And that guy's going to be the one. Well, I guess we got to hear the answer to this one because, I mean, when Pat Robertson says it, Jesus is thinking it, right? You know, yeah, his voice to Pat's ear.
I think, no, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't! Well, all right, we can make a case for that. A big Roman government did, after all, crucify him. Did you ever wonder why Jesus, you know, a big deal has been made about Jesus hanging out with the publicans and the sinners and the tax collectors and the prostitutes? You ever wonder why he did that? Did you ever wonder? Glenn Beck. I know why. Because they're more fun! And what's more, they're more honest! Listen to this. I mean, I know. Pat Robertson's Jesus has blue eyes, and he's as white as as the inside of a loaf of Wonder Bread. I know. Wonder Bread. It's a wonder you can eat it. But really.
I don't know that we ever had any situation like this under the Roman Empire, but I do.
No, you don't know if we ever had a situation like this under the Roman Empire? They had several economic collapses, Pat! Damn! You know, the whole Julius Caesar, Cleopatra, Mark Antony, Cleopatra, Octavian, that whole thing was about averting economic collapse because Rome couldn't afford to lose the Egyptian breadbasket. You know, there may have been gold and silver in the economy, but it ran on commodities. It really did. And Egypt was one great big grain futures. Now, the piracy in the Mediterranean prompted the special proconsulship of Pompey the Great to clean out the pirates because the pirates were threatening the grain supply that went from Sicily to the port of Ostia and fed Rome. Don't know if we ever had any situation. Yeah, well, you know, Jesus, I'm not about that. Yeah, I am. General Chariot never went bankrupt. Oh, you know, there were discoveries. I forget what it was they were making. But there were discoveries at archaeological digs in Italy that noted that the Italians and the Romans actually did brand naming for certain articles. So that people and that people actually had brand loyalty. So, yeah, we did, Pat. But, you know, you're dumber than a bag of homemade stupid. So we'll forgive you that.
I do believe that Jesus said you don't prefer a poor person over a rich person at law. I mean, that's the biblical standard. You give them all equal treatment. And
wasn't it tougher for the rich guy to get into heaven?
Oh, it's tough because...
No, wait, we're going to explain that one away. This I got to hear.
He's so greedy. And greedy is a different thing.
You mean like when you're out there hustling Sea of Galilee, mud mask greedy? Now, this might be an interesting evening. But we are talking about... We are talking about a radical sea change. Oh, and by the way, our buddy Tom Tancredo... whom we asked, you know, the Captain, remember from Mr. Roberts, Captain, I realize that the Navy was hard up for skippers, but they scraped the bottom of the barrel for you. Tom Tancredo is back, this time on CNN, just making the rounds. On MSNBC, he just declared that Sonia Sotomayor is a racist. Now it's apparently that wasn't harsh enough, that wasn't explosive enough, that wasn't inflammatory enough, so he's got to ratchet it up a little bit, or maybe he won't get the next booking. Because at this point, that's where Tom Tancredo is. I have to go on TV and say insane crap, or they won't book me again. Yeah, this time it's LaRaza.
Tom Tancredo, good to see you again.
Likewise.
Let me start with you. Judge Sotomayor is a racist?
Let me tell you that, well, certainly her words would indicate that that is the truth.
No, her words don't indicate that. Her words indicate that she cannot look at the world from the perspective of a doughy, pasty-faced, middle-aged white man because she ain't one. That's what her words indicate, freak.
What else can I say? How else can, you know, I can't look at her heart. I have nothing that can analyze her soul. All I can.
But that's what you just did, freak!
Tell you, and it's just exactly like the things I say are always, you know, used about describing me in one way or the other. All of us in public life have to deal with that. And
you mean like when you called Miami a third world country? Yeah, okay.
When you are looking to be on the Supreme Court, don't be surprised that if you say something like that, or if you belong to an organization called La Raza, in this case, which is, from my point of view anyway, just nothing more than a Latino, it's a counterpart.
Here it comes. Sit down, everybody. Get that bite stick in your mouth or something, because otherwise the neighbors are going to hear you screaming. La Raza, right? La Raza. La Raza.
If you belong to an organization called La Raza, in this case, which is, from my point of view anyway, just nothing more than a Latino, it's a counterpart, it's a Latino KKK without the hoods and or the nooses.
Huh? Now, I know for a fact that I need some help here. I know for a fact that we have a number of listeners on the West Coast and in areas of this country where there is a Hispanic population of note, who might have passing familiarity with La Raza. And I need to know if La Raza, because, you know, I want to condemn them if they are. I need to know if La Raza is going around by night burning great big Brooks Brothers emblems in the yards of white people. Just asking. Is La Raza doing that? Because, see, this xenophobic freak, Tom Tancredo, just said that they are. Are white people swinging from the trees in those parts of America that have substantial Hispanic populations? Texas, call in. New Mexico, call in. Arizona, call in. California, call in. I damned well want to know. Are little white boys being found in rivers, wrapped in chains, so disfigured that they are barely identifiable? Is that happening? Is La Raza doing that? I have to know. We have a certain commitment to facts on this program, and I gotta know. Because I haven't heard about it, and I pay pretty close attention to the news.
If you belong to something like that, you have to explain that in a way that's going to convince me and a lot of other people that it's got nothing to do with race, even though the...
No, you bastard bigot, she doesn't. Sonia Sotomayor owes you not one whit of explanation. You're not entitled to it. You're not worth it, Tom Tancredo. You are beneath her. You're a worm with legs. That's what you are, Tom Tancredo. A worm with legs. No, I'm insulting worms. You are... Oh, what... Oh, come on. You're that amoeba that causes amoebic dysentery with loafers on. She owes you no explanation. None. Zero. Zilch. Here's a word you hate. Nada. She owes you nothing. She does not have to explain a blessed, damned thing to you. No matter how much you scream it or how hard. This is going to get weird. They can't start these hearings soon enough to suit me. No way. Because we are literally going to see blood on a TV screen from one of these racist, bigoted, homophobic freaks' heads exploding. We are.
The logo for La Raza is all for the race, nothing for the rest.
All right, we're not talking about. You know what?
She's a member.
We're not talking about La Raza here, though. We're talking about that.
Really, Tom? Are you a member of Club for Growth? Apparently, you're a member of Hair Club for Men. Shall we judge you by that association? See, that's the thing. When these bizarre little wing nuts do these things and make these kinds of assertions, like La Raza is nothing but a Latino KKK without the hoods or the nooses. Well, you know, the KKK is nothing without the hoods and the nooses. Because that really does sort of define the KKK. You know, you gotta wonder if Tom Tancredo has ever seen any of the photos. Has he ever seen the casket photo of Emmett Till? Has he ever seen those last photos taken of Dr. King? And if he has, did he giggle? My money says he giggled. We are talking about sick, sick people. And these hearings cannot come soon enough. Don't be surprised if you hear La Raza almost as often in the for-profit media as you heard about Jeremiah Wright. Or Acorn. Oh, by the way, they're still working Acorn. They've been accused, and see, this is so funny. They've been accused of supporting secession of the Western United States as a Hispanic-only homeland. Meanwhile, Governor Rick Goodhair Perry of Texas is the one who's talking secession. La Raza is a civil rights and advocacy group. They have a natural focus on immigration and civil rights issues that, you know, pink little me shares. And that business that he said about how, their motto is all for the race and nothing for the rest. You heard that, right? That's a lie. You want to know the real slogan? And I mean, this is catchy, okay? I mean, I don't blame Tom Tancredo for not wanting to use it, because this is just devastating. It's so catchy. The real slogan of La Raza, you ready? Is strengthening America by promoting the advancement of Latino families. Communism! I mean, after all, Trotsky did go to Mexico and everything. Jesus. It's just mind-bending. But you know what? I'll tell you that. I'll tell you what the real slogan, motto, is of La Raza. But the horn is just a few little hours of decent, upright sanity. In a sea of thousands upon thousands of hours of this kind of right-wing filth. You are going to hear La Raza until you are fit to scream. And you're going to hear a woman slurred like you have not heard a woman slurred since Anita Hill. And I include Hillary Clinton in this. I mean, they have the real long knives out for Sonia Sotomayor. I mean, my God, when they're down to the point where they say that you can't say her name the way it's pronounced, you know that they have gone around the bend. They're violent, they're hateful, hate-filled, and they will strew the path with blood and bodies, anything to protect the party. Because after all, Republicans
first and foremost. Party first, baby. Party first. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is the horn. Fire up the phones. You know how to do that. We'll be back. Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, May 28, 2009.
How green is Sotomayor? Bush and the baby bottles. Plus, white is the new green.
It is?
We'll get to that.
All right. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. No idea what you have for us today, so bring it on, Desi Doyen.
Well, the big news this week is President Obama's nomination of Sonia Sotomayor for
who?
The Supreme... Sonia Sotomayor.
I haven't heard much about her.
For the Supreme Court to replace retiring Justice David Souter. The folks over at Grist.org have analyzed Sotomayor's record on the environment, and they say it's limited but promising. They're quoting the president of the environmental law organization, Earth Justice, who says her record indicates she's not ideological one way or the other, but does adhere to the rule of law. Her most relevant environmental case was 2007's Riverkeeper versus EPA, a case that dealt with whether power companies should do more to protect fish species that get sucked into intake valves for the for cooling power plants.
Mm-hmm.
Sotomayor essentially ruled for the fishes, saying that that was the intent of the Clean Water Act and that the EPA should consider what's environmentally beneficial for aquatic species rather than what is most cost-efficient for power companies.
And that was the decision. It saved the fish, but it was overturned later, was it
yes,
not?
Yes. We reported that back in April. The Supreme Court overturned that ruling and instead found in favor of the power companies.
Now, you say she follows the rule of law, they find, in this study. Does that mean that the conservatives, the right-wingers, are going to be in favor of her because she follows the rule of law?
Of course, I think we have a feeling that pretty much anything President Obama does is going to be considered something that the conservatives are against.
Even when they follow the rule of law? I thought that's all these guys wanted, was to follow the rule of law.
The U.S. Energy Information Agency released its energy predictions yesterday, forecasting that global demand will soar 44% in just 20 years, with most of that demand coming from developing countries like China and Russia, which means if we make no changes and continue with business as usual, worldwide emissions of carbon dioxide will increase 40% in just 20 years due to that projected increase in global energy demand. Even with growth in renewable energy sources, the EIA says the demand for energy will lead to continued reliance on fossil fuels for both developed and emerging economies in the absence of any mandatory reductions.
Now, this has been one of the arguments against the Kyoto Treaty and so forth, which is that even if the United States reduces its use of energy and production of carbon greenhouse gases, that these other countries would not, that theirs would raise. And so is that true? Even if we do reduce what we use, that it's going to rise anyway?
Well, at the finalized climate negotiations in Copenhagen in December, China, India, Brazil, and Russia are supposed to be coming to the table. And since the United States, since the election of President Obama, has indicated greater leadership in this area, China this week, talking to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on her trip to China this week, said they are ready to cooperate with the U.S. on climate change negotiations.
So it's fair to say that if we set an example, if we do so ourselves, if we move forward along with the rest of the world, then these other
countries will follow. They want to see some action from us first before they commit.
That's not what they told us during the Bush administration.
That is not.
I'm starting to think the Bush administration was lying to us, Desi.
We've reported before on BPA, also known as bisphenol A, the chemical additive to plastics. That
speaking
is,
of the Bush administration lying to us.
That is a chemical additive to plastics. It's a known endocrine disruptor that affects fetal brain and reproductive development, and it's found in the urine of nearly all Americans. The FDA still maintains that BPA is safe for use in food containers like baby bottles, but the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel recently revealed emails that show that the Bush administration FDA actively sought out chemical industry lobbyists to help discredit studies showing risks from BPA. The Bush administration FDA issued a draft report last August that declared BPA safe for use in baby bottles, but that was based on two industry studies and against the recommendations of their own science panel. And it's also found out that they allowed lobbyists to write significant portions of the report.
Okay, let me unpack this. You're saying that they found that there was poison, that BPA is toxic, and they were using it in baby bottles, and the Bush administration lied about what they knew about it and allowed this to continue in baby bottles?
Yes, that would be pretty much the blunt version of that story, yes.
So the Bush poisoned the babies, didn't care.
And now, a Harvard University study released late last week concludes that BPA does indeed leach into liquids and is found in surprisingly high concentrations in humans after just a short time. The Boston Globe reports on this Harvard study, and they say it's the first to definitively show that drinking from BPA bottles does indeed increase levels of the chemical in urine.
And Bush poisoned the babies and didn't care.
You can go online to greennews.bradblog.com for links on how you can reduce your family's exposure.
And how the Bush administration poisoned the babies and didn't care.
Now, you've heard of whitewashing as a bad thing, but Energy Secretary Stephen Chu means it as a good thing. According to the Wall Street Journal's Environmental Capital blog, Chu this week proposed that governments worldwide examine the benefits of painting our roofs white, literally, because white roofs would be more reflective of the sun's energy. And there's a study that calculates that white roofs and pavements could mean a one-time reduction of quite a bit of carbon dioxide, which translates to removing all the cars in the world from the road for 18 years.
Paint it white. You heard Desi. Check out more at greennews.bradblog.com. Got thoughts, letters, hate mail? Drop them to us at greennews@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Never poisoning the babies. We'll see you next time. This has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, 22 minutes past the hour. Oddly enough, almost halfway done with the program there. Nice little crowd in the chat room this evening. Jump on in. You know it's free. It is. Head on RadioNetwork.com/chatroom. And I promise, nobody gets called noob or anything there. So enjoy yourself. To the mailbag. This from our critic at large, Reverbo, who includes a... Oh, it's not nice to needle the talk host. Oh! Who includes a photograph of his Go Pat Go campaign button. Funny thing is, on the button, Pat's head's tilted to the left. Maybe that's like the famous upside-down stamp thing that's worth a bajillion dollars. Or I don't know. But our pal Reverbo writes, a tip of my old Go Pat Go button, part of a small political memorabilia collection, to David from Tennessee for his outstanding commentary. Some Buchanan moments. In 1992, he ran as a Republican, eventually giving the keynote address at the convention, that being the famous Culture War speech, where he declared there was a religious war for the soul of America. The 96 election had some slim pickings opposing Clinton. Pat again, Phil Graham, Lamar Alexander, and Steve Forbes. Buchanan started out strong, but Dole blew him away on Super Tuesday. Pat's slogan that time was, "The peasants are coming with pitchforks," which earned him the nickname Pitchfork Pat. Finally, in 2000, Buchanan ran on the Reform Party ticket, although not endorsed by Ross Perot. You understand that is how he used to pronounce his name before he got all Frenchified. He was Ross Perot. But anyway, not endorsed by Ross Perot. Buchanan proposed U.S. withdrawal from the United Nations,
and expelling the UN from New York, abolishing the Internal Revenue Service, Department of Education, Department of Energy, Department of Housing and Urban Development, taxes on inheritance and capital gains, and affirmative action programs. In a bizarre, though deliberate move, he chose a black teacher as his running mate, a woman named Isola B. Foster. This team ended up fourth with 0.4% of the popular vote. Thanks, Reverbo. I'd forgotten some of that. Of course, the abolish the Internal Revenue Service, all of that stuff. Those are longtime staples of the hardcore, weird-ass, repiglican right. And it comes as no surprise. But still, don't forget, in 2000, he may have only gotten 4% of the four tenths of a percent of the popular vote, Reverbo, but he got a bunch of votes from, oddly enough, the strangest demographic, old Jewish people in Palm Beach County, Florida. And hence we wound up with a dim leader. That's a hell of a 0.4% of the vote, without a doubt. Our pal Marty writes in and says, regarding Pat Buchanan's culture war speech, wasn't that the speech that Molly Ivan said sounded better in the original German? I think it was. And, of course, hearing from our cultural anthropologist studying life in the American South, our pal Kate, she said, "My oh my, a reeking sister on the bench in a long black dress. Oh, the lunches will never be the same in Chambers. Oh, those old white boys, coffee and his cream, so delicious, salacious food porn." Yeah. And she adds, La Raza, private, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization focused on reducing poverty and discrimination and improving opportunities for Hispanic Americans. They don't hang little white boys, but they scare the hell out of minority cultures in Arizona, California, Colorado, Idaho, and Texas. But the thing is, and I dare expand upon this, because I think what Kate is referring to is the fact that they scare them without doing anything. Just existing terrifies the pasty-faced, doughy white people. And it's true. And by the way, our pal Laura writes in and says, for those who aren't familiar with it, La Raza is basically a Latino equivalent of B'nai B'rith or the NAACP. Garden variety and uncontroversial, unless you think it's a public safety issue if more than a handful of Mexicans or Puerto Ricans get together in one place at the same time. And apparently at talkingpointsmemo.com you can find out a little bit more. Under search for something that's a piece from today. Called Truly Can't Help Themselves. Josh Marshall writes, here's your next emerging meme. Representative Tom Tancredo, our blood and soil, just went on CNN attacking Sonia Sotomayor for belonging to La Raza, which he called a Latino KKK. Josh notes, as I said this morning, it's painfully revealing how conservatives simply cannot help going hard on the race front with Sotomayor, or as David Kurtz just put it, can't help imagining that everyone else is as racist as many of them are. I think that's kind of where I was going, wasn't it? That whole business about the fact that they fear that other people in power would do to them what they have done to minorities in the past, isn't that about the same thing? Yeah, La Raza is basically a Latino equivalent of B'nai B'rith or the NAACP. And as Josh Marshall notes, there's much more of this coming. Yeah, there is, sadly. There is. And it's going to be this every time Every time. Because remember, Glenn Beck just said that all of Obama's friends, and, you know, you couldn't possibly get a nomination to the federal bench unless you were his friend, you know, just sitting around humming the International together, that kind of thing, friends. All of his friends are Marxists. Jeebus. In case you're curious, our pal Jay has sent along the informal anthem of La Raza. And before I go to the phones, we'll just give a quick listen. Let's see if there's anything about, you know, run Whitey off or anything like that. It'll only take a second. It's called the... I believe the name of this piece is De Colores. Yeah, that certainly sounds subversive, doesn't it? Oh, that's some definitely subversive la-la. I'd certainly be threatened by that.
De colores se visten los campos en la primavera.
Oh, that can't be good.
De colores son los pajaritos que vienen de afuera.
Oh, no, there's a picture of doves. And this is video. There's a picture of tomatoes. You know, they're red. In a rainbow, there's a picture of a rainbow here. Must be gay, too. Oh, yeah, another rainbow.
Por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí. Cante el gallo con el kiri, 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 kiri. La gallina con el cara, 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 cara.
Yeah, there's a comment on the video itself. It says, my mom used to sing this to me when I was little. Well, that's the way it is with communists and Marxists. You know, they sing songs, they sing their communist anthems to their children in the cradle, and they don't even understand that capitalism is what God wants for them. By the time they can walk, by the time they can speak, they're already talking about all that communist stuff, you know, about from each according to his, to each according to the, oh my, it's so sad. It's just sad. But Jay also provided a translation. Yeah, she's right on the same page with me. Upon study, I can see the sinister intent of singing about the colors of spring and chickens. Very dangerous stuff. Oh, it is. Don't make light of this. It's insidious. It's how you ruin the children. All the colors, all the colors. Oh, how they dress up the countryside in springtime. All the colors of birdies. Oh, how they come back to us outside. All the colors in rainbows we see. See, with the rainbows. We see shining bright in the sky. And that's why a great love of the colors makes me feel like singing so joyfully. There's only three colors you should love. And by God, they're red, white, and blue. What's wrong with these communists? Oh, the rooster sings. He sings cock-a-doodle-doodle, doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle-doo. The chicken clucks, she clucks, cluck, 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 cluck. The little chicks, they cheep, 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 cheep. It's code, I tell you. It's code. I saw a beautiful mind. It's code. And that's why a great love of the colors makes me feel like singing so joyfully. And that's why a great love of the colors makes me feel like singing so joyfully. See, they have to say it twice. They say it twice to make sure that it burrows its way into your brain and kills America! Gipton, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. All the colors, all the great glowing colors. That we see in the sky at sunrise. Oh, the sunrise happens in the east, and you know, there was an east block! All the colors are seen in the thousand reflections in sunlight. All the colors are seen glittering in a diamond ring. And that's why a great love of the colors makes me feel like singing so joyfully. And that's why a great love of the colors. There's nothing in there about white being a color! Oh, this is the worst kind of racism. From the Head On Radio Network Research Department. Our pal David in Tennessee says, the wiki for La Raza is shorter than the one for the Beagle Owners Club. They represent about the same threat to the country. Oh, those effing white people. This is... Oh, they present about the same threat. Can you imagine that? The wiki entry is shorter than that, for the La Raza, is shorter than that of the Beagle Owners Club. Well, that'll change. That'll change. Let's do go to the phones. Maura is with us. Hey, Maura, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good, except for all these commies.
I was going to join the Ancient Order of Hibernians, but if I ever want to get on the Supreme Court, I better not.
No, I think that's out. Well, yeah, that's out for you. Now, on the other hand, however, if your father was a member of the Mussolini American support staff, you're right in there.
No, I missed out on that.
Darn the luck. Because, you know, that would mean that you're a quintessential American.
Oh, God, help me, no.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I mean, you know, there's a definite connection between Antonin Scalia's daddy and the Mussolini fan club in America or whatever it was called.
You know what amazes me about Scalia? He had a Jesuit education, which is usually a very liberal education. I don't know what happened to him.
Well, before he had the Jesuit education, he had a very hardcore education, you know, there in New York. I can't remember the name of the school, but he went to a very intensely conservative school before the Jesuits ever got hold of him.
Well, he went to Xavier Military Academy.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, and that's run by the Jesuits.
Oh, I'll be darned. I didn't... okay.
It's on 16th Street in Manhattan. And it always used to be liberal.
Well, but I guess, you know, we learn hard lessons. Schools can only do so much in the face of what the parents do at home.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right.
Because, you know, no matter what they say in school, when you go home and your daddy's wearing a brown shirt and talking about what a fine fellow Mussolini is, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of against you.
Right, exactly.
These people are unbelievable. You know, I've never met anybody that's so afraid in life as a conservative or a Republican. They're afraid of their own shadows. And I don't understand why. I don't meet liberals that are like that.
Well, they're afraid of their own shadows because they recognize the darkness and the evil that lurks inside them, I think, Maura. And I hate saying that about any member of the human race. But that's what, you know, that's that brand of authoritarianism that the right wing teaches, preaches, and eats, sleeps, drinks, and breathes. You know, be afraid. The other are out there, and they're after you. I mean, whether it's somebody of Hispanic descent, you know, whether it's racial or genetic, or whether it's a matter of sexuality or a matter of gender, whatever it is, they're afraid of it as long as it is not exactly them.
That's the sad truth.
And they have to acknowledge inside themselves what they would do if they had the power. I mean, it's like it's like that dangerously bizarre right-wing religious movement in the Protestant circles, the Christian Reconstructionists. These people
right.
come out and say in public that if they got power in the United States, they'd do away with the Constitution, the only law of the land would be the Ten Commandments, and they'd stone everybody to death.
Well, that's kind of like Ave Maria Land down in Florida, started by the guy who owns Domino's.
Yes. Yes. And they come in all stripes. I mean, really, if I understand correctly, Scalia and Thomas and Alito and maybe Roberts, they're all Opus Dei?
I don't know about Alito, but I'm pretty sure the other three are.
And, you know, I don't go in for the weirdness of, like, the Da Vinci Code, but you can just read the reality. And it's a pretty sick and twisted and bizarre organization. You know, they have to live...
Absolutely.
They live in... and I guess they've got a headquarters in New York there?
Yes, they do.
And they live in these segregated cells, and the women have to clean up after and do for and take care of and attend to the needs of the men? I mean, it's... Oh. You know, and this is before you get to the, like, whipping yourself and wearing the barbed wire. What's that called? A salice? Chaliche? I can't remember.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. It's literally a little piece.
In a lot of the rulings on the bench, you know, it gets uncomfortable after a while.
Thomas More was found to be wearing a hair shirt when he was finally executed in England. And, you know, those things aren't comfortable either. They make your skin bleed. And that's, you know, that's the part that I object to more, the idea that, that meaningless suffering is an emulation of Jesus Christ. Because it is. It's
sure,
meaning,
right.
It's meaningless suffering.
He doesn't want anybody to suffer.
No, I mean, isn't the principle, whether it's Catholic, Orthodox, Protestant, whatever, that he did the suffering for us?
Exactly.
And, you know, but I guess there are people who believe that he left a suffering deficit and we've got to make up for it. It's mind-boggling.
Absolutely it is. But well, I'm very glad to hear you're going to D.C. next week.
I am too. I was quite depressed at the prospect of not going. But we're going to figure out a way to get me there. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, I'll let you go, Bob. It was real nice talking to you.
Oh, it's always so nice talking to you. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing real well, thank you.
Good. Wonderful.
Good night.
All right. You take care, Maura. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's our pal, Maura. Love hearing from her. It's all too rare. And let's see. This is Susan. On the line, our news ninja Susan, on the line from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan.
That's not a cold, dear.
No?
That's a spell.
It's a spell?
Yes.
Oh, my God. They're dark arts practicing witchery kind of... Well, we need an Inquisition.
Yes. And don't forget the... High Inquisitor. You might have to send to Rome.
Oh, God. And I'm being reminded here by our pal Marty that, yes, indeed, the rats, that new term that we were given last night by, I believe, Sean, the rats are, in fact, all Opus Dei. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia, the rats are all Opus Dei.
Well, the reason I called in is In fact, this might have something to do with the rats. With the way they're starting to bubble up, you know, and with the horrendous crap about Sotomayor, perhaps the Obama administration should take select people aside and say, guys, if you don't like her, I have another candidate in mind by the name of Anita Hill.
That would take the starch out of them, wouldn't it?
Awkward! Oh, I would just, I would pay for a ticket.
Oh,
just to watch that first meeting.
Oh, if, well, even if that question was going to be asked on air of, say, wild-eyed xenophobe Tom Tancredo, I would be glued to the television set. I'd make them turn off the children's programming here in the house just to let me watch for a couple of minutes to see his head just, you know, go all Mars Attacks and play the Slim Whitman music and, you know, right inside the space helmet. When, yeah, we could make it Anita Hill. Would that be better for you?
Yeah, you know, you do the complete, you know, the Exorcist bit and do the complete research.
Yeah, with the pea soup and everything.
Yeah, throwing up pea soup and all that jazz. Because, you know, somebody like, I'd love it, Keith Olbermann, get him on the goodie and say, well, if you don't like her, how about Anita Hill?
Yeah, we've got backup. If this doesn't work out, you can always have Anita Hill. They would. They'd go to the moon.
I would love to see it asked of Antonin Scalia, or better yet, Thomas. Because that just might get him mad enough to croak. And then Obama would get another.
It may happen anyway. I wonder what those guys are quietly thinking. Well, I know what they're quietly thinking. This doesn't change anything. Kennedy's still here, and us four rats are voting together, and we've still, and that's the truth, Susan. The right wing still has a lock on the Supreme Court. This is all tempest in a teapot, ginned up by the right wing.
Yeah, I wonder. It surely cannot be considered a threat if you send somebody a coupon for 1 3-pound of bacon.
Yeah, maybe from Smithfield Meats. I mean, they're nice and corporate.
Yeah. And make it a real coupon. Say here.
Or a bacon gift card.
Yeah.
What's that place that shows up every Christmas in the malls? Hickory Farms. A Hickory Farms beef stick gift card.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a present for you from a grateful citizen. Oh, we're just terrible, aren't we?
We are, but it's like a pressure relief valve or something.
Well, I look at it this way. I make karmic debt on it, but hey, what the hell? I got to have a few laughs here and there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I'm sure you've got blinkies going, so I will let you go. And, by the way, dear old hubby, did not get to go home like he thought he was going to.
Oh. So is he still?
I got called by the hospital last night, and it was his nurse, and she said, oh, by the way, I just wanted to let you know that we're moving him to the cardiac unit.
What? Is he okay? I mean, you're yeah, chuckling. I mean, so.
Yeah, he does this every time. It's a, you know. It's a routine with us. He comes down with pneumonia, and then what he does is they automatically pull blood, you know, blood samples for blood work. And then they check it, and they find out he's throwing cardiac enzymes that they don't particularly like. So they shove him in the cardiac care unit.
Well, please tell him that we're thinking of him.
Well, I will. He was so disappointed. Stupid, stubborn Irishman. Yeah, I'm sure you're going to go home one day after you get slapped in the hospital. Sure.
Well, he is on our mind and in our thoughts.
Yeah, I know. But
as are you, because these are it's a miserable thing to be in the hospital, but it's also a miserable thing to have someone in the hospital.
Yeah, especially when you can't go down there.
Yeah.
That's the bad part. I can go down there, but because of my condition, I can't go into the hospital because I can't walk that far. Which is a drag. Now, it's a case of, if you don't laugh about it, you're in bowl, so. But I just... Oh, one thing I did want to mention.
Yes.
Did you, that email I sent you last night for Amber, did you pass it on to her?
I have not yet because I didn't hear back from her, but I will, or she may be listening now. I understood what you were talking about, the fact that she, go ahead.
Those who, it's, Amber and I live in Oregon, which has an assisted suicide law. And I wanted to, it seems that there's some misinformation out there. Oregon's assisted suicide law, or Death with Dignity Act, is very specifically written. The only person who can invoke that law, you know, like, say, Susan, the news media, if that law was to be invoked for me, the only one who could invoke it is me. No one, even if they had my power of attorney or any other, for any other reason, can invoke it. Nobody. For any reason. And even if I do invoke it, that doesn't mean I'm going to be allowed to use it. I have to be sat on by a board of psychiatrists that I'm not sane. And then I have to be sat on by a board of physicians to prove that I fit the physical requirements for the law, meaning that you have to have a terminal or a chronic illness that affects your quality of life to the point where you are allowed to use it. In other words, it's very difficult to use it. In all of the years since this law was passed,
there's never been a case of abuse.
400 times. Total. No one has ever been used, had it used on someone else, because it cannot be. It's barred by statute.
Yeah, simply cannot happen.
Can't be done. And that's how it got by all of the court challenges, is because of the ironclad protections in place. I did not want anyone being afraid of living in this state because there is this kind of a law in this state. The only person that can evoke it is you.
Good to know. And I will pass, and if she's not listening tonight, I will pass that along to her.
Cool.
And it will put her mind at ease, I think.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of misinformation about it that gets passed out, and specifically by the right wingers. They're still trying to kill it. It's not going to work, guys. Come on, give it up.
Yeah, but remember, you know, but you're only safe as long as there's someone reasonably sane in office. Remember, at the same time that we were all being ginned up into an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy by the dim leader administration, John Ashcroft was out there attacking sick people for wanting some level of relief in Oregon. About the same time that he was rounding up the hookers in New Orleans and attacking Tommy Chong.
Yeah, and he got slapped down for it. Big time.
Yeah, but it doesn't stop them from trying. We are only as safe as we the people are willing to keep ourselves.
Yeah, and this thing has been through court challenge after court challenge after court challenge.
it's about as ironclad as it's possible for a law to get. I agree that it's nothing absolute, but this is pretty close to it. Oh, and by the way, I've heard people, ever since Prop 8 was passed, I've heard people condemning the initiative process. The initiative process gone wrong gives you California. The initiative process done right gives you Oregon's Death with Dignity Act, because our legislature would not pass it, no matter the fact that most of the people in this state wanted it.
Well, you know, I've heard Mark Levine talking about it, and about the disasters that it has led to in California. And I take it that he is describing a situation in which democracy, or the word democracy, is actually a masquerade word for something that is actually mob rule.
Exactly.
Or what a certain author that you and I are prone to reading would refer to as yammerheads.
Yeah, it's not mob rule here in Oregon, because you can't flirt around with the Constitution like that.
But you have an actual honest to goodness Constitution.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's the difference, because as I understood Mark to explain it, there, you know, most states have a legal primacy law, for lack of a better term, where the Constitution is a trump to everything else. You know, the federal law is that way. Congress can pass laws all day long, but if they are repugnant to the Constitution always wins, at least
exactly, theoretically.
And that sounds like the situation in Oregon. But as I heard Mark describe it, in California, the Constitution, and I believe these are his words, is just another law with no primacy over another statute.
Oh, my God, what a stupid way to run a state.
And so as a consequence, you wind up with what he described, and it really is just, it's, you know, eye-rolling crazy, a situation where people vote for lower taxes and more services. At the same time,
it's lynch law.
Well, it's mob rule.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, how can you know the thugs who passed Prop 8? How can you refer to them as anything more than a mob?
In Oregon, if you want to, I can't be absolutely correct on this. Sure, on this, I would have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure. If you want to amend the state constitution by the initiative process, you not only have to get a certain percentage, but you also have to get a certain percentage of the voters out. In other words, you can get the correct percentage, yes, but if you don't have the correct percentage of the voters of the state actually turning out, tough.
You still
don't
lose.
Pass.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you prove that there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And, in fact, you mentioning California, and I know you've got other things on your mind and other things to deal with, Susan, but you mentioning, first of all, a question for you from our buddy Marty, who asks, what if the patient is found to be incompetent under the assisted suicide law? Is it not usable then?
Not usable.
Because incompetent would mean that you cannot, you know, if you're incompetent, you can't commit suicide.
Exactly.
Because suicide, you know, the sua part of side is self, and if you're incompetent,
exactly.
you are unable to comprehend your concept of self.
Which eliminates all children, anyone under age. No. Gone. You're not eligible by fiat. Just by their age. It eliminates anyone, say, who is mentally challenged. Forget it. Don't even bother to apply. They won't be listened to.
Well, it sounds to me like it's as close to foolproof as such a law can be.
They wanted the protections in there as ironclad as possible. I just don't want people being afraid that if they're sick, somebody's going to come along and shove them full of a lethal dose of sedatives. No, it's not going to happen.
And just to shift gears on you real quick, because we were talking about the initiative process, Marty sent something else along, and this will make your skin crawl. He says, thought this might interest you a bit. Yet another attempt to screw over the public employees by the Repiglicans. In California, a former assemblyman by the name of Keith Richman of Northridge, California, who is a Repiglican, has floated the idea, get this, of closing the state budget gap this way. See if you like this. A one-year holiday on contributions by the state to pension funds that would save about $4.6 billion. Retirees would still get their checks, but to keep the money flowing, investment funds would have to be leveraged, and those investment funds have already been whacked by the banksters and the private marketeers.
These guys don't seem to realize that there's no such thing as a free lunch. They act like there's a free lunch.
Well, see, I think I differ with you a little bit, Susan. I think they know the reality with which they deal. But their goal, because they are Repiglicans and because they are so-called conservatives, they have a goal that is seldom stated, but it's very much a reality, and, you know, it's manifested in the words of people like Grover Norquist. They hate the idea of government to the extent that we recoined them anarcho-randians.
Okay, let me put it this way then. The majority of the people who vote for these things in California can't seem to realize that there's no such thing as a free lunch.
And David in Tennessee, who once upon a time, long before this program ever began airing, was David in Oregon, chimes in and agrees with you, Susan. He says, Susan's right. Oregon has an easier imitative path to law change than most states, or initiative path to law change than most states, but much more sensible than that California BS. And he says, by the way, the Oregon death with dignity law is patterned after the Dutch approach, and that thing has been in effect long enough for people to observe, and make empirical judgments about that law's effects.
Yeah, and the
if it just didn't rain so damn much, it sounds like Oregon's a wonderful place.
Actually, it's
at least the western part of it.
Yeah, actually, it rains just about as much. You probably get more rain where you are.
Well, you're probably right. I mean, I live in a rainforest. You live in a rainforest. It rains.
Yeah, it rains. But it's neat. Let's face it, we don't have the big coal culture. We don't have the right-wing government embedded into the state the way you do. Sure, we've got right-wingers, but, there's a standing joke in Oregon that we keep sending up capsules over east of the mountains to look for sentient life, and we can't find any. That's where all the Republicans stay. That's where all
I don't know. If there was some way to teleport our little ramshackle mansion here. Yeah, one of these days I'm going to travel. One of these days we're all going to travel.
Well, maybe one of us will sooner or later hit the lottery.
Hey, you know what? I got to tell you, Susan, last night was very frustrating. I knocked off the program an hour early in order to get on the conference call, and it didn't last, an hour. So I had tried to get this, because my little lotto ticket is my retirement plan.
You and me both.
I had tried to buy my evening Powerball and Hot Lotto tickets earlier in the day, but we had a world beater thunderstorm come through, and it apparently had fried the ticket printing machines all over town. They were unable to communicate with the mothership or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, got done, and at about 10 minutes till 9 here Eastern time, because they shut off sales at like 9 or some such, I boogied on down to the store to get my two tickets and stood in line while the clerk chewed the fat with a customer until I sat there and watched the timer run down to 9 p.m. And I stood and I walked up and need my tickets for. Oh, I'm sorry, my screen's already changed. And that kind of thing makes me totally irrational because I am now convinced, Susan.
Yeah, that one would have been the one.
That was the ticket.
Yeah. You want to hear another instance of the how to be screwed over in one easy lesson?
I think I took that class.
this is my version. Told you I got my disability.
Yeah.
Well, that enables me to get Medicare. I just got the paperwork on it. And so I called up our caseworker here. And because we were low income, my husband's Medicare payments had been helped. We were getting help with that through the state. And he tells me, because you're getting disability, that puts you over the income limit.
Oh, for pity's sake.
So my disability is now going to be eaten up by his and my Medicare premiums.
Well, but with your disability, you can't just go on Medicaid?
No, we get too much money.
Lord above.
Doesn't that
But at least you can chuckle.
No.
I know, because it beats screaming. I understand. But
yes, it's either laugh or scream, and so I don't want to blow your speakers since I'm one of those people with supersonic screams. So I'm hi.
Yeah, it's like one of those inaudible dog calls kind of things. You know, the collies howl when you scream three blocks away.
Well, you ask my kids, they could hear me for blocks when I started bellowing.
Yeah, don't be late to
Never
dinner.
Never had a problem with hearing Mom. Especially since I was the only one that was yelling in German. I found out real early that if you yell at your kids in German, German sounds really icky because it's pronounced way back in your throat. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's one of those glottal
yes.
languages. And it sounds really, really bad. And if you say it in a mean voice, it sounds super bad. And my kids were in their 30s before they found out I'd been yelling a recipe.
Yeah, stuff sounds bad in German, just like if you say garbage disposal in French, it sounds romantic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's it's just one of the way the language is put works. It's just
well, that's one of the things. That's one of the reasons it's always so fun to read any quotes from Pope Benny, in my Colonel Klink accent, or maybe it's my Major Hofstetter accent. Klink.
That sounds more like Colonel Klink.
Oh, gone. Yeah. Susan, we'll talk to you soon, and tell Donald we're thinking about him and rooting for him.
Okay.
All right.
Get yourself a monocle.
No monocles, and certainly not the hairdo either.
Well, yeah, at the very least, you need the riding crop.
No, because Agnes will take it from me.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Me either, and I'm glad.
Okay.
We'll talk to you later, Susan.
Love to Agnes. Bye-bye.
Bye now. About 9 minutes past the final hour of tonight's program, let's take a quick break. What's on your mind? Sing out. Oh, by the way, this in from from another David. This in from David in South Carolina. More repig-licking madness. He says, most subject line, most insane repig-licking of all. Here we have the governor, talking about here in South Carolina. You remember Mark Sanford, crazier than a bastard rat. Here we have the governor filing lawsuits against the legislature for his right to refuse stimulus funds in the state with the third highest unemployment rate in the country. So, of course, he's always been against frivolous lawsuits, except for now, or Bush v. Gore, or whenever it benefits Republicans. This is the quote from the news story. Governor Mark Sanford has filed a federal lawsuit to secure control of federal stimulus funds. Two state lawsuits argue the budget compels Sanford to spend the money. A federal judge will hold a hearing Monday to decide whether the cases belong in state or federal court. Here are the arguments. Sanford's federal case. The language in the Federal Stimulus Act says each state's governor has discretion over this slice of the stimulus. Allowing lawmakers to decide on how the money is spent would cede that discretion to the General Assembly, weakening the governor's authority, and that would violate the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, which says the language in the Federal Stimulus Act trumps state law. There it is, not primacy, supremacy. I love how this stuff works. And in the state cases, the General Assembly, not the governor, controls spending, according to the South Carolina Constitution. Governor Sanford, when he certified the disputed stimulus money, made South Carolina eligible for the $350 million. There can't be $350 million laying around that Repig-Licking can't mess with. Somewhere along the way, there has to be some order to the universe, does there not? And then Sanford must spend available state and federal money as directed by the legislature. When lawmakers included the stimulus in the budget, tapping and spending it became the law in South Carolina, by which the governor must abide, and South Carolina Education Superintendent Jim Rex, and it's South Carolina, you're going to have an, yeah, Jim Rex also should have standing to request the money. How much money are these lawsuits going to cost? See, that's how the repig-licking mind works. They're going to make me spend the money, but then I'm going to tell them there's no more money because we spent it all on the lawsuits. Whew. Oh, that's some catch, that catch 22. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So anyway, we'll take our little break. Wear out the phones. Don't wait till 15 minutes before the program to decide you got something. Do it now. 304-658-3333 on your own hook. Or 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you need us to do the toll-free gig. It's that easy. Email comes in, as you've heard many of them this evening. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is Activist Radio. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice.
I've gotten stared down for being in the wrong side of town. In the rich man I'd be if I had that kind of chip. Lately I wanna smack the mouths of these racists. Podrás imaginarte desde afuera ser un mexicano cruzando la frontera, pensando tu familia mientras que pasas, dejando todo lo que tú conoces atrás.
supieras tú que esquiva las balas de unos cuantos gringos rancheros. Le seguirás diciendo good for nothing, we're back. Si tuvieras tú que empezar de cero. Now why don't you look down on where your feet is planted? The U.S. soil that makes you take shit for granted. If not for Santa Ana, just to let you know that where your feet are planted would be Mexico. Correcto!
Don't call me gringo, you fucking beaner. Stay on your side of the goddamn river. Don't call me gringo, you beaner. No me digas beaner, Mr. Puñetero. Te sacaré un susto por racista y culero. No me llames frijolero, pinche gringo puñetero.
Want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Frijolero is the name of the song. For those of you wanting to know. Yeah, it's got some fun words in it, but come on, it's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock on the East Coast. I suspect little Jimmy and Susie have, little Susie have probably heard songs with worse in it. Lord knows I've walked past the computer a couple of times when Ferg was YouTubing and heard just hair-raising lyrics. So I hope you weren't offended. It's a song. It's a song. Let's see, where to go at 18 minutes past the hour. I wandered past Alternet earlier today and saw a new essay by Joe Bajant. The original posted at joebajant.com, JoeBajant. Joe's got a whale of a grip on reality. I mean, he's got a death grip on reality. The title of it, and the minute I saw it, you know, click, had to. A Redneck View of Obama's Presidency. When it comes to expressing plain truths, Joe says, few are as gifted as American rednecks. During recent travels in the Appalachian communities of West Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Joe, you didn't call! I've collected scores. You didn't. We could have gotten it. Joe. During recent travels in the Appalachian communities of West Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky, I've collected scores of their comments on our national condition, and especially President Barack Obama. In America, all successful politicians are first and foremost successfully marketed brands. In fact, the Obama campaign was named Advertising Age's 2008 Marketer of the Year. George W. Bush's brand may have collapsed, as they say on Madison Avenue, but things don't change much. Rednecks instinctively know this. Great quote coming. It don't matter who gets to warm his butt in the White House chair, says a West Virginia trucker. Top dogs eat high on the hog, and the little dogs eat the tails and the ears. That's what them bailouts is all about, and that's the way it is no matter who's president. So you might as well vote for the guy who looks like the most fun, because you're going to be watching his ass on television for the next 8 years. Yep, Joe says, rednecks do have a way of getting right down to the bone of the matter. For example, the news show us Obama in an auto plant. We see Obama talking to the troops in Iraq. Obama ladling out grubs in a soup kitchen. That's the stuff of urban liberal wet dreams. But a fella over in the mountains of Mineral County, West Virginia, a guy named Pinch, who sells fence posts, poles, and firewood out of his backyard, puts it like this. Nothing against Obama, mind you, but the last time I looked, the car plants was dead meat. Obama's never even come close to serving in the military except for serving up that batch of hash in Baghdad. And there he was with his wife in a soup kitchen, for God's sake. Things has got so bad that we got soup kitchens all over the country now. So two millionaires in their armored limo drop by a soup kitchen, and this is supposed to make me feel good about my country? You know, I got to tell you, even if I don't agree with all of it, that's a hell of a lot more trenchant than anything that's come out of the mouths of Pat Buchanan, Pat Robertson, Tom Tancredo, Glenn Beck, any of the goons that I've, right-wing goons that I've played for you on the program tonight. This observation from Joe. God, he's got a microscope. What makes us feel good in the long term is getting back to the true meaning of being an American. Buying stuff and racking up debt. Still, who'd have ever thought we'd see the President of the United States on television telling us there's never been a better time to refinance our homes or buy a car, which is exactly what he did last month. Hawking home refi seems to be a bit unpresidential to some of us. But then, too, this is America, where, by orders of President Bush, we struck back hard at the 9/11 terrorists by going shopping. In any case, a local mortgage lender here in Winchester, Virginia, is running ads with pictures of Obama and quoting him on the virtue of debt. That lender is one cast-iron Obama-hating Republican. So maybe Obama's truly a uniter after all. As to America's working-class debt serfdom, some of us were resigned to that a long time ago. My former neighbor, Fat Larry, whose real name is Myron and thus is happy enough to be called Fat Larry, says, "Hey, look, I don't care if Obama's putting us in debt. I was already in hock for the rest of my life before they started hollering about a debt crisis." Nor is he opposed to accepting a handout. Obama can let a smidgen of them trillions land in my poke anytime. Right now, I got no problems 50,000 bucks wouldn't fix. Oh, brothers, sisters, I realize it's Thursday and it ain't Wednesday, but can I get an amen? Right now, I got no problems 50,000 bucks wouldn't fix. Yep, Joe's right. Rednecks can say it plain. Rednecks can say it clear. Go have a look, joebagent.com. Yeah, okay. No, David, hell, it wasn't too edgy. That wasn't too edgy at all. I love that song. I thought it was Molotov. But I didn't want to say it out loud and make a mistake. No, brilliant work. Molotov, the name of that band. So, a couple of other things to hit besides weirdo right wings, right wing nuts. Did you know, in line with what Joe was writing about, we now know, because these are all deep, dark conspiracies, did you know that Barack Obama is driving car dealerships out of business if they're owned by members of the Republican Party? That's how perfidious he is. That's what a Marxist he is. This, according to the Washington Examiner, evidence appears to be mounting that the Obama administration has systematically targeted Chrysler dealers who contributed to Republicans for closure. So naturally, of course, the phony news network, the propaganda arm of the Republican Party, Shepard Smith works there, Chris Wallace works there, Glenn Beck works there, Bill O'Reilly fantasizes over falafel there. We'll do it live! Had to pick up and run with it, too. Michelle Malkin showed up to play in that little cesspool this morning. Believe me, Steve, over the last several years, we've all documented the Obama-Chicago gangland tactics that certainly make this a possibility. A possibility. A news channel is now broadcasting possibilities. In other words, non-facts as news. Beautiful, ain't it? So thereafter, Major Garrett, who is not a major, not sure if he's a Garrett, he works for Fox, he may actually be Jimmy Jeff Gannon Guckert, Major Garrett asks White House spokesman Robert Gibbs about it. Oh, Lord, you couldn't pay to have this stuff written. This stuff wouldn't pass muster. This stuff, honest to God, this stuff would not pass muster among Jon Stewart's writers. It's just too loopy. And, you know, this from a gang of people who put together skits about John Oliver having swine flu, you know, get him, shoot him, shoot him. That was hilarious. This couldn't go up at the Onion. He really couldn't. So here's Major Garrett. And for those of you who want a good giggle, this is kind of esoteric, I understand. Do you remember Major Major from Catch-22, who had to be promoted to Major because Captain Major would be entirely too bureaucratically, militarily confusing? So he winds up, his real name was Major Major, because his dad thought that would be a cute prank to play on a baby. And so he was swiftly promoted through the ranks from Lieutenant Major Major to Captain Major Major to Major Major Major. And, you know, you can't go any further. You can't be Colonel Major Major. Yeah, that. One of the most brilliant books in the English language. Major Garrett!
Related to that, there is some concern in the blogosphere that of the Chrysler dealerships being closed, a disproportionate number appear to be dealerships in which the operators contributed to Republicans and hardly.
Okay, and what?
Any in which contributions to Democrats have been closed down. I'm not saying the White House knows anything about this. I'm just asking, would you be concerned about any taint of politics whatsoever in any of these decisions?
Well, oh! You know what? This is another one of those failure in journalism moments. You remember your classroom experiences, elementary school, middle school, high school, and you always had somebody who would ask the most idiotic question. You know, questions are not bad. Questions are good. Good teachers will say there's no such thing as a stupid question. Ask your questions. And there's invariably somebody in the room who will make a point of asking stupid questions. At which point, after two or three repetitions of this, the entire class will turn around and go, "Shut up!" Well, this is a failure in journalism moment, because that Johnny-on-the-spot White House press corps needs to turn around to Major Garrett. Shut up! It's just ridiculous. And, of course, this question is asked directly out of the Fox News-style handbook. There is some concern. By who, Major? You? Michelle Malkin? Then say it. Michelle Malkin is concerned. No. There is some concern. How much concern, Major? There's some concern. Well, I've got some toenails. But they're on my toes, so it's not a concern. There is some concern in the blogosphere that of the Chrysler dealerships being closed, a disproportionate number appear to be in which the operators contributed to Republicans. They're car dealers! They're Republicans! Most car dealers are! And hardly, which contributed to Democrats, have been closed down, whatever that means. I'm not saying the White House knows anything about this. Then why are you asking? Oh, wait a minute. You're not doing journalism. You are injecting speculation. Which, Major Garrett, isn't journalism. Would you be concerned about any taint? You know, and that's the part where the entire Johnny on the spot White House press corps turns around and goes, he said taint. If there's any taint of politics, would you be concerned? And Jesus, Barbara Walters isn't this annoying. If you were a twee, what kind of twee would you be? Robert Gibbs, you say?
Again, Major, let me reiterate that we don't make those decisions, okay? Chrysler makes those decisions. So I'm sure you can send Chrysler the address of the blog that you refer to. I don't know whether that report is accurate, but I can simply say that since my first answer was we're not involved in making those decisions, I would think your question would be appropriately dealt with by the company that is.
Memo to Robert Gibbs. There's this cool word that comes out of, like, middle school. And it's okay if you want to use it on Major Garrett, because he is one. And it starts this way. Look, doofus. Because he is. What a neo-maxi zoom dweeby. What a doofus. Now, here's the fun part. This is a quote from Nate Silver. There's just one problem with this theory. Nobody has bothered to look up data for the control group, the list of dealerships which aren't being closed. He explained further, it turns out that all car dealers are, in fact, overwhelmingly more likely to donate to Republicans than to Democrats, not just those who are having their doors closed. Here's a real statistic. 88% of the contributions from car dealers went to Republican candidates and just 12% to Democratic candidates, while the list of Chrysler dealerships being closed gave 92% of their money to Republicans. And that is not, let's see, what's the word we're looking for here? Yeah, statistically significant. Doofuses. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
I have perfect comeback for this Major Garrett.
Yes?
Just an idiot. First, a little history.
Okay.
Here in Ashland County, Ohio, where I just happen to live, sorry, we got windows open here and that and loud traffic. Our state, the president of the Ohio State Senate his name is Bill Harris.
Okay.
And Bill Harris has for years, regardless of what his Wikipedia entry says, because I just checked it last weekend, and his Wikipedia entry has his previous occupation listed as construction. Couldn't be further from the truth. Bill Harris built his multi-million dollar fortune selling cars here in Ashland County. Bill Harris has a GM dealership. In fact, he's like the only GM dealership now here in Ashland County and the only Chrysler dealership. And within the last couple of weeks now, the stories have come that, and Bill Harris is a Republican and a longtime Republican. And in the last couple of weeks, it's come out in the news that Harris is not losing his Chrysler dealership. Every other Chrysler dealership in Ashland County is. And in fact, longtime Chrysler dealerships that were three, four times the size of Bill Harris's little podunk operation that he has here in Ashland,
right,
they're closing. Whitey's Auto Mall has lost their dealership for Chrysler. And Spitzer is huge here in Ohio. They lost their dealership. They lost their franchise. And Harris is also not losing his GM license to sell GM cars. And I said, so, you know, I've said it before, it's true. God, I hate living here. This town is so red, I can't stand it. They make me want to pull my hair out. And when this story came up, and there's a place that you can leave comments on the local, I call it the Republican Rag website, because that's
the fish wrap.
What it is. Yeah.
The Ashland Daily Fish Wrap.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It just makes me insane. I said, well, imagine that. Republican State Senate President Bill Harris isn't losing any of his dealerships, but the other, I mean, Bob, these other dealerships that are losing their franchises were huge. Harris has little rinky-dink. I mean, good God, there's a car lot maybe 6-7 blocks from here that has maybe a quarter of the cars that Harris does. I mean, Harris's operation is small, and he's not losing any of them. But these great big places in Mansfield, and kind of a history on Mansfield. Mansfield is Mansfield, Ohio, is like the main metropolis of a city called Ontario, Ohio. And in Ontario, they're in Richland County, but in Ontario, Ohio, is where the GM plant is. We've got a GM plant like 20 minutes from here, and Mansfield is also home to one of the largest state reformatories in the state of Ohio. So so there's quite the population over there, and they're losing their franchise, and Republican Bill Harris isn't. Come on.
Yeah, excuse me. I know.
When you start, I was like, I can't believe what I'm hearing. I mean, when you started playing that, it's like, I can't believe what I'm hearing, because it's not true. Ashland, Ohio is a perfect example of that. Look at Bill Harris.
How true. Yeah, but of course, that's not going to make its way into any speculation from Major Garrett or Michelle Malkin. Sue, you really need to blog that.
Well, I probably should, here's the thing. This is how they'll defend him, though. They'll say, well, you know, Harris is a proven leader or whatever. You know, he's a proven businessman. You know, supposedly he's retired from that, but his kid runs the operation now, and they have for years. You know, it's a family bit. Like I said, they're all multimillionaires. That's how they've made their fortune. And years ago, in the not-so-distant past, you know, I think they stopped making the Chevy Beretta in 1996 or something like that, you know. So it's not that long ago. And friends of ours had bought a brand spanking new Chevy Beretta from Bill Harris Chevrolet. And when they would fill the gas tank up, it would leak. And so Deb and Dwayne took it back, and they're like, you know, hey, you know, we fill this gas tank up, you know, it leaks. And Bill Harris's solution, don't fill the tank up. Honest to God, Bob, I wish I could make this up.
What, only put in an eighth of a tank?
Yeah. Deb would drive it to work, and because my dad worked with her. She was a secretary where my dad worked. And they would have to go outside to smoke, and so they'd go outside for their smoke breaks, and she's like, you know, well, don't smoke near the car. You know, she was afraid of the car blowing up, understandably, because you've got a car leaking gas. And it finally took them months to and finally filing a complaint with whoever to get this resolved. But I mean, my God, it's a brand spanking new car, and it was it's been kind of hilarious actually to see other people, because you know I kind of got the ball rolling on it in the comments section, you know, bashing them. You know, this is how Bill Harris Chevrolet does business, and then the other stories from people started rolling in. It's like, yeah, you know, for every one happy customer, you got four unhappy. And I'll tell you the thing with you know, dealerships here in this part of Ohio are scarce, and even more scarce now. They're closing them all and just letting the Republican Bill Harris, president of the Ohio Senate. I gotta keep repeating that just to put the lie to Fox News. But you know, now that dealerships are getting even more scarce. But that bit with Dwayne and Deb is exactly why I own a Ford. I won't own a GM product. Because I kind of firmly believe that if there's something majorly wrong, you take the car to the dealership and let them fix it. That way it's got the dealership warranty and things like
right.
that.
Yeah, I'll never forget the brand spanking new 1971 Chrysler Newport. Brown metallic flake in color. We bought it. It was all prepped on one day. The next day we started out, left Alabama, driving to West Virginia, got to Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, about 40 miles from Florence. And some guy was gesticulating madly at us, rolled down the window, and he said, "Your gas tank is falling off." And, of course, we were leaving this trail of sparks behind us, and my father was carrying on a conversation with my mother, as he did for 600 miles, you know, in which, look over there, and, you know, wherever their eyes went, the car went. You know, I lived this terrified childhood in the backseat of a Chrysler product. And lo and behold, it was. So we got it up to the local Chrysler dealer for the warranty repair, and they said, "You know what? This gas tank wasn't even put on. It's just wired on with a coat hanger." And, you know, on the one hand, you go, and, you know, this is why the American auto manufacturers are in the shape they're in. Because, you know, that culture of cutting costs so the executives can make a fortune, that's what put them in. That's how you wind up with coat hangers holding up gas tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the reason the mechanic said just don't fill it up that far, or the service manager or whoever, was because somewhere up the chain at Bill Harris Chevrolet, somebody said, you know, we don't get that much money out of that warranty work. The real repair work, where we can soak the dummies, that's where we make the money.
Right.
Oh, God. But, you should blog about this. I'll send you the link to the story, and maybe you can put a comment in there and just sort of smarten people up.
Okay. Just absolutely unbelievable. When I heard that, it's like, where does news get their facts? I mean, good God.
It's from Michelle Malkin. The facts and Michelle Malkin cannot exist in the same sentence, let alone the same universe.
Well, and another thing real quick about the auto industry. I don't want to take up too much time.
That's okay.
Everyone... Well, not everyone. We certainly weren't. The people that have square heads on their shoulders certainly weren't bashing auto workers unions earlier, well, this year, last year, and that, saying that the downfall of the auto manufacturing industry is the result of the unions, the greedy old unions. Well, here's the thing, you know, and of course that's been proven to be. But here's the thing, especially with GM, you know, their union has been back to renegotiate and has successfully renegotiated two or three times now since they signed their contract in 2006, I believe, 2006, 2007. They've been back to the table two or three times and renegotiated again and took more concessions again and agreed to work for less again. Now, when it comes to the bondholders, the people that thought that they could turn a quick buck by buying into GM, here's your offer. Oh, hell no. We ain't taking that.
We're not taking any cuts. That's for the working people.
All right. Where's all the, where are they clamoring over that? You know, they sure didn't mind sticking it to the working But where are they sticking it to the rich people that make their money by making money? And that's it.
I know. Yeah, but they're going to own 20% of GM. We want our money. Hey, look, when's the last time you heard of anybody going to one of these little casinos or riverboats or Atlantic City or Vegas and putting the $100 on, you know, red on the roulette wheel, and it comes up black, and they say, well, I want my money back. No, I'm sorry, sir, you lost it.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect.
I mean, they'll throw you out. You know, please don't touch the bet once you've made it, sir. They will throw you out of Vegas for touching the chips.
And blacklist you, too.
Yeah, and these privileged clowns expect to get their money back. You know, they took the risk. Just because it's a bond market does not... I mean, anybody remember... I mean, is it just me, Sue? Does anybody remember Michael Milken? Does anybody remember junk bonds? A lot of people took a bath on that. Just because it says bond does not mean it's, you know, for sure.
Right.
But apparently it is in anarcho-randian... What was the phrase anarcho-randian world anarchy no if you've got enough money you can touch the chips,
right?
And it just makes
do
me
over.
Nuts
yeah
my bad, do over. Ghost man on third. Oh, he just he stole home.
Okay, I'm starting to have some VOIP problems, so I'm going to let you go. But thanks for letting me call in. And just letting everyone know that Republican Ohio State Senate President Bill Harris Chevrolet isn't losing any. Bill Harris isn't losing either his Chrysler or his GM franchises. But everyone else around him is, including people in the big, big cities. I mean, Spitzer lost theirs, Bob, and they are huge. They've got dealerships from Cleveland to Columbus, and they lost theirs.
Wow. And, you know, you got to think about, you know, the guy in the parts department, the guys back in the service bays. Goodbye. And yet, those are working people.
Yeah.
But the bondholders, well, them we're worried about.
And it's also going to work very well for Bill Harris because it directly funnels more money straight into his pocket. And I mean, that's his retirement slush fund.
Well, right, because he has just you know how it is with a pig licking, Sue. They just love the free market, especially when the free market is manipulated to their benefit.
Exactly.
He just had all the competition taken out.
Yep, sure enough.
I mean, that's a pretty good day at work.
Yeah, it sure worked well for him.
Yeah, good.
And I'm not saying that his role as president of the Ohio State Senate worked in his favor any.
Oh.
I'm pretty damn certain it wasn't overlooked.
Me too. And you know the next trick to this is to kind of bird dog the thing and watch what legislation moves through the Ohio State Senate. Next term. Watch for the quo in the quid pro quo to come back. Because you know as sure as God made little green apples that they will.
Right.
There'll be something to somebody that matters somehow, and there will be dots to be connected. Sue, thank you very much, dear.
Thank you, Bob. We'll talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, and all too infrequent, frankly.
Okay. I'll try calling more often then.
Bye. Bye. That's Sue, chat room den mother, videographer, producer supreme. Bill Harris Chevrolet Chrysler. The only game in town. You want a car? You're buying it from us. Mercy. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, oh, darn it. Well, ring back. That'll be fine. You know, I had just by way of happy dumb luck, our good old buddy Bruce Birch popped into the chat room last night. Hadn't heard from Bruce in a good long while. And he announced some happy news to me last night that had a new daughter arriving today. And I've just gotten a message from him saying, my new daughter is in intensive care right now, problems breathing. Say something to the universe for me, please. A lot of people will say something to the universe for you, Bruce, and for your baby girl, and for your baby girl's mama. A lot of people will say a lot to the universe in myriad different ways. We'll be thinking of her. I can't imagine that. And we will hope that she gets better. So, I guess, I guess that's pretty much the program for the evening. In reference to the boys in the back, the guys in the garage, our buddy David in Tennessee says, the guys in the back. Hold on. Wait a second. I just spent 3 weeks getting my 2007 and up AC certification, and now I don't have a job? Yeah, those are the realities. Those are indeed the realities. Going right back to the phones in a sec. Our buddy Dennis sent something along a minute ago that sort of ties in with all of this. It's a blog post by Coffee Cat. I don't have the link, otherwise I would tell you where to go. So you'll just have to trust me that I'm really reading this. Iowa winters can really make you lose touch with your neighbors. I live in the suburbs where the houses are built so close together you can practically borrow a cup of sugar without leaving your kitchen. Just hand it through the window. Today was nice. There were many neighbors out watering flowers, mowing the lawn, trimming bushes. We all waved and said hello and stopped to chat and get reacquainted after the long winter. The title of this, by the way, is The Hidden Statistics in My Neighborhood. The small talk quickly turned to a discussion about the economy. It was as if we were all dying to talk about our situations, and one by one we shared our stories. Quite frankly, I was shocked. Everything looks so normal and consistent on our street. The sidewalks are peppered with children riding bikes and scooters, riding lawnmowers still hum through the yards on the weekend. There are no foreclosure property signs dotting the front yards. No major layoffs have been announced at large employers in the area. Everyone leaves early in the morning and returns from work at dinner time. Things may look the same, but they are not the same. My neighbor to the left is in heavy equipment sales, and his salary is mainly commission. He divulged to our small circle that his salary has been cut in half, and so has his 401k. The woman two houses down runs a daycare out of her home. She watches children for double income earners. Half of the children she used to watch are now home with one unemployed parent who is looking for work. Her income has been halved as well. I shared with our neighbors that my husband was forced to take a $1,000 per month pay cut back in January with no end in sight. We're not statistics. Our situations won't show up in the unemployment numbers. We're the hidden statistics. With each of our families profoundly impacted by this economy, we all stopped most non-discretionary spending, and we're saving every nickel. We're all trying to make up for lost income, decimated 401ks, disintegrated college funds, and retirement plans that have been indefinitely shelved. You won't hear about my next-door neighbor, or the woman down the street, or my family, but we're out there. There are millions of hidden statistics just like us, trying to survive what has happened and hoping to hold on to what we have as the future unfolds. William writes in, speaking of American auto manufacturers, I worked for Ford for well over 30 years. The Focus, for a prime example, the Ford Focus, had more recalls than you could shake a stick at. Anything from rear wheels falling off because of an axle nut to ignition locks that, without warning, would not turn, and that one never became a recall and was over a $300 repair, and they used the same part that would fail again. There was no need or sense to any of this. Just two examples of many models. Some models had electrical issues that would cause a fire, which were recalled no less than three times because the fix did not fix the problem. Yeah, that's the work. I don't understand the right-wing mind's the disconnect. That's not a worker's fault. That's one of those decisions that's made in order to make the year-end bonus for the CEO a little sweeter, two-tenths of a penny at a time on a part. Remember, there's real profit to be had out there on the 8th and 16th decimal points. I'll never forget that. I have a feeling these stories are all over creation. You know what? I'm glad to be here because I want to hear them and I want to share them. Because after all, we're in the reality business. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm just leaving Miami today. I really love it down there.
Beautiful, yeah.
First time down there. I think you quoted some right-winger today saying that that's a...
Yeah, Tom Tancredo. It's a third-world country.
Oh, I really like the people I ran across down there. I really like them. There's a lot of people from other countries, but they seem like they're probably more patriotic than he is. Hard-working people.
Yeah. But, you know, they're the wrong kind of hard-working people. Because, Tom Tancredo is a lot like Clarence Thomas. Wants all the benefits, but then he wants to climb the ladder, but once he's at the high end of the ladder, he wants to start stomping the hands on the rungs that are below him.
Mm-hmm. That's the way a lot of those right-wingers are, I would think.
Yeah, me, mine. Yeah.
Yeah. I had this friend of mine who lives down there. She's from Venezuela, and she's a Buddhist. So she invited me to go to a place where they have a Buddhist chant. And that was interesting, and I met this guy there and started talking to him, and he said he was a speechwriter for Lyndon Johnson.
Huh.
Interesting, the people you run across.
Yes, it is, and especially when you see as much of the country as you do. You know, you remember those old Warner Brother cartoons, Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, that kind of thing. I always think, when I think about Repiglicans like Tom Tancredo, I remember that great line from Daffy Duck. I may be a coward, but I'm a greedy coward. That's the right wing. That's the Republican Party. Alan, kind of up against it. Good to hear from you, brother.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk soon. Bye now. Our good buddy Alan on the road, on the way out of South Florida. So that's the program for tonight. Thanks very much for being around. And by all means, be back here tomorrow night. It's Friday. That means a little time on the front porch, pass the jug, pick a little on the banjo, whatever. Front porch Friday is always fun. Thanks to everybody who makes this all go. The moderators in the chat room, the moderators on the forum, the news ninjas, Texas Betsy, our blogger. Thanks to Ben Birch, Peter Godbold, John Fox. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know, fighting like hell upstream because they know that we are all downstream and all downwind, and they really know what that means. Say a special word into the ear of the universe for Bruce Birch's baby girl. I know you will. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to Inside Scoop. Lots and lots that are going on in Washington. So today is sort of a Washington potpourri. There are many, many topics to discuss. And it also gives you a chance to call in and let me know what's on your mind. Obviously, I've got more to say about the Supreme Court nominee, Sonia Sotomayor. Like most of America, I have now read more. Even than I knew yesterday, I know more today, and I want to talk some more about her. I also want to talk about Senator Roland Burris. Yes, of Illinois. You remember him, the laughingstock senator appointed by the laughingstock governor. He with the extra hair. Burris has got to go. And I make no compunction about calling for his resignation live on the air today. And I'll tell you why. To me, the smoking gun has smoked, and he really needs to go. There's other things to talk about. GM going bankrupt and transferring its mostly to us, the taxpayers, with a good portion left to the United Auto Workers. I think a solution that, is probably the only possible solution. I want to talk more about California's direct democracy, not just in Proposition 8. I touched on this a little yesterday, but I'll continue. It's ruining not only California, but it can harm the rest of us. We may all be on the hook because California voters are being, let's just say, a bit selfish. California, in fact, is a great example of the perils of direct democracy. Not something I complain about very often. Usually I complain there's too little democracy. But California is a great example of too much democracy. Sometimes it actually is better to have a representative to, help to deal with the contradictions. Having direct democracy, I think, sometimes is like children being in charge of their own food habits and deciding to eat candy, chocolate, and ice cream all day. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how to respond to North Korea, a very scary threat. North Korea having detonated a nuclear explosion, one high enough to be measured on the Richter scale, and talking about invading South Korea. Yikes, that's a problem that Barack Obama really doesn't want, but he's got to deal with, just as he has to deal with Iran. And he is, of course, in the Middle East this week, and it's not getting that much attention in the press. It's a difficult balance, talking with all of those Arab dictators, including the ones that are our friends, who are so hated by their own people, whether in Egypt or Saudi Arabia or anywhere else, particularly in Egypt. I hope he still remembers human rights, even when we have to work with some of these dictators. It's a tough balancing act, but I think he has to do it. So on all these topics, and any other that is in your mind, this is a great day to call in, because it's the kind of day where I may not get to all my topics, but you definitely can put me on track. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let's start with Sonia Sotomayor, a woman who, the more and more I read about her, the more and more I'm realizing that she's a moderate Democrat. I guess she's liberal. She's certainly not left liberal. She is known, frankly, as someone who is good for business, fair on business, and she's definitely not a liberal Scalia. And that's too bad. Maybe there is no Latina on the court in America that has the self-assuredness of a Justice Scalia. Of course, what she is very likely to be confirmed. Had Barack Obama put a more left-leaning judge on, then, there'd be a lot more fight in the confirmation. And, you know, I'm of two minds about all of this. I see Sotomayor is a lot like Chief Justice Roberts. And I think Obama's next pick, and he's going to get another pick, he has to get another pick, will be more on the lines of Alito, as a mirror image. Chief Justice Roberts, while definitely right-wing and conservative, has a demeanor of someone who's trying to work together. And frankly, although it's very hard to tell gradations on the far, far, far right, Roberts is less extreme than Clarence Thomas, Antonin Scalia, and Samuel Alito. That does not mean he's not extreme. It just means that on the level of extremity, he's not quite as far off the limb. He's certainly farther than Justice Kennedy. Here's the thing. Obama will get two picks. It is certain. And the reason it's certain is because Justice Stevens has been on the court since the days of Gerald Ford, who appointed him, back when Republicans were not necessarily conservative. Think about that. That's how long he's been on the court. He's in his late 80s. I think he's 89. He could be 88. I don't have his age in front of me, but he's definitely up there. And he definitely has made his transformation from a Republican appointee to someone who was pretty reliably in the moderate to liberal end of the court, definitely to the left of the center of the court, which is today held by conservative and Kennedy. Let's not forget, Kennedy is so conservative that he was willing to overrule the American people and give the presidency to Bush. But he's the middle of the court. Stevens is to his left. And Stevens will certainly retire under Obama. Stevens very much wants to be replaced by a liberal. If it looks like Obama's going to go toward re-election, he might just stick around. I think he's out to break the record. In 2 years, Justice Stevens will be the longest-serving justice ever on the Supreme Court, and I think he wants to hold that record. And then he'll probably step down, probably in Obama's first term. Though, if it looks like Obama's going to sweep to a victory, possibly in his second term. It's impossible, that Stevens will not retire during Obama's term. He will not wait out and be 96 years old and wait for the next president. I'm quite confident of that. This is a man who has served his country very well. And even though he may want to be on the court till he dies, he recognizes that he's got to quit during a liberal president. So Obama's going to get two picks. And I think Sotomayor was his safe pick. This is the pick to replace Justice Souter. She largely would have the same views as Justice Souter, someone who is a moderate liberal, someone who is not the kind of intellectual powerhouse that, say, Justice Ginsburg is on the left-hand side, but someone who is respectably allows, you know, generally liberal views. But she's like Roberts in the sense that he knows she's going to be confirmed, and maybe because it's so early in his presidency when he wants to do so many things on health care, the environment, and energy, and so forth, maybe he felt like he wasn't ready for a fight right now. Well, that's good and it's bad. It's good because she'll be confirmed easily. It's bad, though, because if someone on the right were to retire, not just Justice Stevens, and if Justice Stevens retires, I would really hope Barack Obama puts in a very, very strong liberal voice. Someone like Harold Coe, the dean of Yale Law School, someone who I worked with, I have a lot of respect for. I think he'd be the first Asian on the bench. You might as well put him up there as well. But I don't advocate for him because he's Asian. I advocate for him because he's a very, very powerfully strong legal thinker, someone who's not only equal to, but frankly a lot more brilliant than Justice Scalia and can give him a run for his money. Or someone like Kathleen Sullivan, another extremely brilliant mind.